The views expressed in this program are those of the participants.
The prisoner Roth is in Barracks 8, isn't he?
Yes, sir.
He should be working now with the labor gang.
Yes, sir.
I'll permit you 5 minutes with the prisoner. You're to talk only on family affairs. What do we got there?
A few things for my husband. Socks, shirts, some fruit.
Not permitted. Go. Come.
Emily. Oh, my dear. They didn't tell me. What a happy surprise.
Sit down.
Here.
Victor.
You'll find me changed, older, but I'm well.
Oh, Victor, your hands.
No, please, my dear. It distresses me. We all must work, but it does us no harm. Amelie, dear, we have so little time.
Forgive me, dear.
There's so many questions. How are the children?
Well.
And Rudy, does he know?
No whispering.
We told him you were on a trip.
Oh, I'm glad. There's no need to tell him ever. He shouldn't learn to hate.
They can't keep you here. You've done nothing wrong.
Well, I'm afraid they don't agree with you, my dear. They think that your husband is a very bad, obstinate old man.
But they will release you soon.
I don't think we should be too certain of that. You see, even if they let me out, I should still fight for scientific truth.
Don't antagonize them, Victor. For my sake. For the children.
Amelie, it would be unworthy of the love that we have for each other for me to be less than myself.
But I must hope.
Of course you must. And you can help. You can give me peace of mind. You must take Freya and Rudy out of the country.
And leave you here?
It's only for a little while. Germany will find her old virtues again. Freedom, belief in God.
You were told to talk only about family matters.
Welcome, everyone. It is Thursday, October 5th, 2023. I'm Bob Metz.
And I'm Robert Vaughn.
And this is Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online.
Join us for an hour of discussion that's not right-wing. It's just right.
Fade into color, and color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be alright.
It's truly amazing how the Nazis of World War II were exactly like the Nazis of 2023. The full unedited version of Robert's recent discussion with today's guest, Salim Mansour, is available on our various video channels and platforms, and what you'll hear in today's shorter audio version of that discussion is, for me, akin to learning the real meaning behind the phrase, opening a can of worms. No doubt most of you have already heard about the recent faux pas made by Canada's Parliament by giving two standing ovations for a World War II Nazi officer who fought against Canada's ally in that war, Russia. Why is the Canadian government acting so embarrassed about honoring one Nazi while it simultaneously speaks with pride about honoring another Nazi and supporting a Nazi regime in Ukraine? Well, Salim's narrative addressing this apparent contradiction was so profound that I find myself forced to reconsider numerous historical and political narratives in an entirely new light. I called it a can of worms, Salim calls it a scab with open pus pouring from the wound. Well, feel free to pick your own metaphor. Right after our reminder that you can write us at feedback@justrightmedia.org. Hear us on WBCQ and on Channel 292 Shortwave. Follow and like us on your favorite podcast platform and visit us at justrightmedia.org, where you can access all of our social media links, archive broadcasts, and the support button that makes it easy for you to support the show. Because as always, your financial support is appreciated and is what makes this show possible.
We're joined today by Salim Mansour of Western University. Hello, Salim.
Hello, Robert.
Salim, I think everybody knows of the events on Friday, September 22nd, in the Canadian Parliament, where they honored a 98-year-old Waffen-SS Galicia Division veteran Yaroslav Hunka for fighting against our Russian wartime allies. And this was done in the presence of Volodymyr Zelensky, who was attending Parliament. The details behind how this man, Hunka, now possibly facing extradition to Poland, by the way, got to receive such a unanimous accolade from Parliament have been discussed at length since then, and we're not going to go into that nitty-gritty detail of who, you know, who blames who, that kind of a thing, although we may touch on it. Suffice it to say that the Speaker of the House who introduced Hunka, that is Anthony Rota, has resigned his position. Every parliamentarian who rose to applaud Hunka has claimed ignorance, has given a half-hearted apology, and the Prime Minister has given the typical liberal apology type of thing, which is like, I'm sorry this offended you type, you know. And he used the occasion to basically smear Russia as if it was Putin's fault. It's disgusting. Truly, we are living in a kakistocracy that is ruled by the most incompetent. In 1982, the book, The Ominous Parallels, The End of Freedom in America, was published. The author, philosopher Leonard Peikoff, a Canadian, by the way, by birth, outlines how the culture of Weimar Republic Germany resembles the culture of America, predicting that America, if this continues, will go the way of a totalitarian state, such as with the Nazis in Germany. Now, with the passing of every day, Dr. Peikoff's prediction is coming true, but not only for America, for Canada as well, where the pace of descent into tyranny is quickened with the election of Justin Trudeau, propped up by Jagmeet Singh, and an ineffectual opposition in the so-called Conservative Party. Now, I have a list of the ominous parallels drawn together of Canada's current elite and the parallels they have with Nazi Germany and the Weimar Republic. But I'll get into that later, if time permits. For now, let us get into the history of how we arrived at a disgraceful point in Canada's history where we would be honoring in Parliament unanimously a Nazi SS soldier who, by the way, has sworn allegiance to Hitler. As a matter of fact, I've got that his oath right here. If he was part of the SS, the quote is, "I vow to you, Adolf Hitler." Notice that it's not to the German Republic. It's not to the Third Reich as previous prior to Hitler it was, prior to 1934. But I vow to you, Hitler, as Führer and Chancellor of the German Reich, loyalty and bravery, I vow to you and to the leaders that you set for me absolute allegiance until death. So help me God. So that's the quote that that man who was honored swore all those years ago. So Salim, how did we get here?
Robert, how did we get there is a long story.
We got time.
But this is what not only amuses me, strikes me, saddens me, but I think that there can be a silver lining, a positive in what is the standing ovation given to Volodymyr Zelensky, president of Ukraine, and 98-year-old Yaroslav Hunka, former member of the Waffen-SS Galician Division in the visitors gallery, the loud clapping, cheering, standing ovation and honor has echoed around the world. It is now the story right across the globe, and it is no more a sort of a secret in our cupboard that we have hid for over 80 years, the story that Canada has been dabbling with Nazis, have had Nazis in this country, have protected Nazis in this country. That story is now out in the public. And like, if I use the metaphor, a scab, a wound that has dried up and you don't play with it, but if you want to play with it, which is what our Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has been doing over the past 18 months of this war in Ukraine, if you pull on a scab, then all the pus, dried up or still fresh, is going to pour out of that wound. And that's what has happened. The scab has been pulled, and now it's coming all into the daylight. And the positive part of that is that this can be therapeutic. We'll have to come to terms with it, not only as Canadians, but as people, because Canada is a country of immigrants, particularly over the last half century. And Canada is proud and celebrates its multiculturalism. This prime minister has said that Canada has no core identity. We are a post-national state. So people from all over the world have come and have brought their baggage into Canada. And the good, the bad, and the ugly is all around us. We are part of it. And so this thing has now brought out all the ugliness. What were we doing having this 98-year-old man in the visitors' gallery? And then everybody, 338 members, standing and giving him a standing ovation as a Canadian hero who had fought the Russians in the Second World War. My God, we send these people to the parliament, these 338 penguins, or worse. We send them to the parliament from the prime minister down, and they have no sense of history. They have no understanding of what this country's role was in World War II.
You know, Salim, go back to where Rota, the Speaker of the House, introduced Hanke to Parliament. And if you look at it, a number of people have pointed out that when he's reading of Hanke's accomplishments as a veteran, Ukraine veteran, fighting the Russians, his eyes go up. As if it just finally dawned on him that, hang on a moment, during World War II, the Russians were our allies. And people are thinking that that's the moment that Rota knew that he was through.
Right. But we can go into all these various analyses. And again, there's a constraint of time. But yes, if we just spend a few more minutes on this matter, you're absolutely right. Rota raises the eyebrow. This man apparently is a constituent of his North Bay area riding, Nipissing Temiskaming riding in the North Bay area. And Yaroslav Hunka is from that riding, apparently. And so somebody introduced him to the speaker, and the story that is being circulating is that the speaker invited him and so on. But we now know, we understand fully that this is all a cover-up. This was a staged operation. It was orchestrated. It came out of the PMO's closest advisor on the Ukrainian file, right from the time when the Maidan Revolution took place in 2014, which is the triggering effect of the war that we are watching now. The triggering effect was not the invasion of Russia into Ukraine. It was what happened in 2014 in Maidan coup d'etat that overthrew an elected president of Ukraine, Yanukovych, and then brought about the installation of this current president, you know, and everything that happened between 2014 and February of 2022, which was the point in time when Putin launched this special military operation. So that's a history that deserves to be talked about. We'll set it aside for the moment. But everything has been staged. I mean, Chrystia Freeland, whose grandfather was the editor of a Nazi magazine paper in Krakow and worked for the SS Reichsfuhrer, Heinrich Himmler, grandfather Mikhail Homiak, if I got the pronunciation right, was probably a person who knew Yaroslav Hunka. They're of the same age or of that same generation. But back we are here. This whole thing was orchestrated and staged. It could not have happened without the full participation of the prime minister's staff. Nobody can walk into the parliament. You have been there. I have been there. I've been there many a time as expert witness to participate in committee hearing in the parliament on various subjects that I was invited to participate in. You just cannot walk into the parliament. Your entire biography, your entire file is wetted.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, don't let this go unsaid that you were actually honored in the Senate of Canada.
Yeah, it was a decision of the Senate to honor me with the 158th Medal of Canada, the sesquicentennial celebration in 2017. But the point is that nobody walks into the parliament, especially into the parliament of the nature, when a head of state is in visiting the parliament as the honored guest, in this case, Zelensky. So nobody comes in without having been fully vetted. The whole due process of gathering information of that person, and then that person, when he walks in, has gone through all the tests, you know, full body search and so on and so forth. So this was all staged because Yaroslav Hunka did not come alone. He came with his family. He came with his friends. With my limited resources, do a quick Google search on the background of these people, and I find that on 22nd, timeline photo of Yaroslav Hunka's granddaughter, Theresa Hunka, taking a picture of her granddad sitting in a wheelchair in a room, which is possibly a reception room in the speaker's office, sitting there. Granddaughter takes a picture and then posts it immediately on the Facebook with the line saying, "Dido is waiting for Zelensky and Justin Trudeau, the president and the prime minister, to come to the chamber to greet Yaroslav Hunka." Okay, it's all there, unless it'll get scrubbed in the meantime so the false narrative can then stand. The point I'm getting at is that the people, 338 members, who stood and clapped for Zelensky and gave a standing ovation to Hunka, were all advised of what was going to happen, because it's an orchestrated affair. And most importantly, all the leaders of the House and all the opposition leaders were fully informed of what will take place, because this is a stage affair. This is orchestrated. And so now, once it happened, and the people around the world took note of it, the backtracking began immediately after the weekend. And it was all the speaker's fault that he had done his homework. And then the speaker was thrown under the bus. And the apology that you mentioned to the country and to the world, the apology was, Canadians made a mistake. The Canadian Parliament made the mistake, not I, Justin Trudeau.
Obviously, it's extremely upsetting that this happened. The speaker has acknowledged his mistake and has apologized. But this is something that is deeply embarrassing to the Parliament of Canada and, by extension, to all Canadians. I think particularly of Jewish MPs and all members of the Jewish community across the country who are commemorating Yom Kippur today. I think it's going to be really important that all of us push back against Russian propaganda, Russian disinformation, and continue our steadfast and unequivocal support for Ukraine, as we did last week with announcing further measures to stand with Ukraine in Russia's illegal war against it.
Canadians know this is a question of right or wrong. Canadians know that, yes, it is incredibly hard for Ukraine to continue to stand against a Russian aggression. And let's be honest, it's hard for the democracies around the world who are there to support their citizens, who are investing for the future, who are challenged with a challenging economy around the world, to continue to step up as Canada has, with close to $9 billion in aid for Ukraine. But we will, because the cost on Canadians, on our lives, on our world, will be so much greater if Putin wins this war, that we will and have to stand every single day until Ukraine wins this war.
Robert, this is not the first time. When in April, Zelensky addressed the House of Commons virtually, all the 338 members of the parliament stood up like penguins flapping their wings. And they did the same thing on Friday, September 22nd. And so for Pierre Poilievre to come around, or for Andrew Scheer as the House leader to start holding Anthony Rota responsible, or Jagmeet Singh and his House leader and so on, and Karina Gould, the House leader for the Liberals, is complete sham. No serious person, if there is any honor among Canadian people, none is going to buy this story.
As Andrew Scheer, the House leader for the Conservative Party in Parliament, said that they ought to have known.
Well, I mean, when Andrew Scheer ought to be known, he should have known.
Yes.
So the story now is going to pour out, not only about this, because the Prime Minister on this occasion went public saying how proud his government is, how proud he is as the Prime Minister of Canada, that his government has put out $9 billion for Zelensky's military force. $9 billion so far, maybe more will be coming. What have we been doing in this war? Whose war is this? Has anybody taken any accountability? There are voices now coming out of Europe questioning everything about this war, including senior members of the partners in this war against Russia, this proxy war of NATO against Russia, led by the Americans. Zelensky came from New York. On 22nd, he was in Ottawa. The night before, I believe, he made a tour with the Prime Minister in Toronto, where their caravan was booed by the people. And then some of our media people immediately went on X-File Twitter and started posting, who are this crowd? Where do we get this Russian trolls in Toronto or in Canada? Well, this is the argument or excuse that the Prime Minister made, that at the end of it, this is all Putin's fault. So Putin now has his finger right in the PMO, directing the Prime Ministers of Canada and his staff to invite a Waffen-SS, member from the 1943 division that was fighting, waging a war of genocide against Poles and Jews, and then fighting the Russian army, that is the Soviet army, and planted him inside our parliament on Friday, the day of Yom Kippur. Well, that is an amazing feat on the part of Putin.
Oh, those Russians.
Here is the thing. Zelensky came from New York because the previous week is the annual gathering of all the leaders from around the world coming to New York for the opening of the fall session of the General Assembly. So Zelensky addressed the UN General Assembly to almost practically an empty hall, just as did other leaders of the Western governments, like Olaf Scholz of Germany, the German chancellor, to practically an empty hall.
It's interesting. I don't know if you saw this, Salim, but I believe it was Ukrainian media that filmed part of his speech and had B-roll shots of the audience. Right. And in the audience is Zelensky himself.
Yes, right. I saw that. So, all of this is going on. And there was the Polish Prime Minister and the Polish President. And on September 19th in New York, the Prime Minister announced in public at the UN. And let me read to you what he said, among other things. He says, the Polish Prime Minister, my pronunciation, please forgive me, Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki said, we are no longer transferring weapons to Ukraine because we are now arming Poland with modern weapons. So this was the first indication about the spat between Poland and Ukraine. And then, following the Prime Minister, the President of Poland, who had addressed the assembly, then went out of the UN building with the East River behind him. This is what he said on September 19th. He said, President Duda raised eyebrows when he compared Ukraine, quote unquote, to a drowning person clinging to anything available. Zelensky is right there in New York. And then he says, President Duda says, a drowning person is extremely dangerous, capable of pulling you down to the depths. So now Poland, that has been a critical party in this proxy war against Russia since February of 2022, is distancing itself from Ukraine, wants to cut it down. And immediately after the events in our House of Commons on September 22nd, the Polish government immediately announced that they will be calling for an extradition of Jaroslaw Hunka as a war criminal. Now, Poland is going to demand that. What have we been doing in Canada? You know, nurturing this member of Waffen-SS, you know, and bringing him in to a parliament and honor him. But more importantly, what have we been doing for the past 18 months and more in this war? You know, when nobody has explained, or this government, or what is our national interest, or why are we there? When our needs as a people is so immense, coming out of COVID-19, coming out of an economy that has been, you know, basically in the process of being dismantled. And here we are. So that's one part of the story, Robert, and it is an ugly story. But the other part of the story, and I think the more important part of the story, is the story about the Ukrainian Canadians over here. But there is, among that segment of Canadian population that is of Ukrainian origin, there is a substantive section in that population who were Nazis, members of the Ukrainian nationalist organization led by Stephen Bandera in the 1930s and 40s, that were allies, partners, collaborators with the Third Reich. And they wage their own ethnic, religious war of genocide against the Poles and against the Jews. And they have been here since 1945. Mr. Hunka and people like him did not arrive here on their own. Hopefully, more and more people will learn. I cannot believe that our media is going to tell this story, because our media is completely complicit. We don't have an open and free and critical media. But Canadians themselves, like you and I are doing, will take the initiative and interest to dig into their own history.
There was a documentary on 60 Minutes. 26 years ago, in 1997, they had a 15-minute documentary piece on why Canada has become a safe haven for Nazis. And it featured a Brooklyn investigative reporter or investigator, Jew, who came to Canada to track down and had a list of 1,000, just the top 1,000 most egregious names. And he said most of them he found in the phone book. Back in that time, a Nazi after the war was given automatic entry into the country simply by showing their SS tattoo, which convinced the Border Patrol Agency, of course, that they weren't communists, at least. So they come on in. And Canada is getting the reputation, or at least has the reputation, of being as bad as Argentina when it comes to cozying up to Nazis after the war.
Well, there were at a minimum two stages in which Ukrainian Nazis, in particular, since we're talking about this segment of the population, apart from Germans, Nazis, members of the Third Reich who came to Canada, there were two stages. One was towards the end of the war, and then the end of the war itself, May 8, 1945. That was the first stage in which a rat line was opened by the OSS, which is the precursor to the making of the CIA in 1947. During the war, it was the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, they opened the rat line to a whole host of German Nazi officers and leaders into South America, Argentina, Brazil, Uruguay. And then for the Ukrainians, the Stephen Bandera group and groups like to Stephen Bandera's group, a rat line was opened to the Five Eye country, that is Canada, Britain, again, organized by OSS and MI6. So Britain, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States. Okay. So that was the first stage. The second stage was when in the 1950s, when Khrushchev came to power in the Soviet Union after the death of Stalin in 1953, Khrushchev began sort of de-Stalinizing process in the Soviet Union, which culminated ultimately in 1956 with the famous secret speech that he gave to the leadership of the Communist Party of Soviet Union in their annual convention, where he held Stalin responsible for the excesses that he had done and tried to lead to the effort that was mounted, a peaceful coexistence with the West, you know, to lower down the temperature of the Cold War, et cetera, et cetera. So in that process, Khrushchev released over 100,000 Ukrainian from the gulags, the Gulag Archipelago that Solzhenitsyn wrote about, that is the prison camps in the far north and east of Soviet Union, in Kazakhstan, in Siberia, etc. So who were these people? These were the people who had fought the Soviet army, which is what our speaker was mentioning, you know, the hero who had fought the Russians, you know. So they fought the Russians. So they had fought the Russian in the company of whom, or in the service of whom? Hitler, the Third Reich, the German Nazis, you know, and in the process, the genocides were committed. Right now, where the war is taking place in Ukraine. Ukraine was not only the bloodlands, but also the badlands of Eastern Europe, where all of this comes together. The Baltic states, Eastern Poland, of course, Ukraine itself, Russia, and this is where it meets. Poland and Ukraine have been the gateway of European armies invading Russia. Again, 338 members of our parliament possibly have no knowledge of this history and won't want to know that the invasions of Russia, going all the way back to the Napoleonic invasion and then the German invasion during the World War I, and then the German invasion of Hitler, Operation Barbarossa, that began in 1941, the gateway into Russia or into the Soviet Union was through Poland and Ukraine. So these were released and they came and were parceled out and distributed to Canada, to Australia, to New Zealand, to Britain, you know. So that's the two waves of these Ukrainian Nazis who arrived over here. And none of them were questioned because the war against Russia, at that time Soviet Union, began immediately as the war against Germany was coming to an end. The dropping of the A-bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki had nothing to do with the Japanese bomb. The greatest war crime, crime against humanity, was committed by Truman, who in a flash of a second incinerated over 200,000 Japanese when the war was basically over. The A-bomb was dropped as the first bullet fired against Soviet Union and Russia. So the alliance immediately shifted. I cannot hold Speaker Anthony Rota at fault, because what is his age? He's possibly of our generation. How many of our generation in Canada will recall that the Soviet Union was not only an ally, but as Ernest Hemingway famously said, that anybody who loves freedom can never pay the debt to the Soviet Union for defeating Nazi Germany. How many people know that?
So there's a long relationship between Western intelligence sources and Pentagon military industrial complex and the Nazi regime, particularly as it concerns Ukraine. But it's still quite extraordinary that you have the Canadian prime minister and all the Canadian politicians gathering to publicly cheer a member of one of the most infamous SS Nazi units in world history that was so vicious and vile, even the Nazis thought they went too far.
The Schutzstaffel was a major paramilitary organization under Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party in Nazi Germany and later throughout German-occupied Europe during World War II. It began as a small guard unit known as the Saalschutz, made up of party volunteers to provide security for party meetings in Munich. They don't understand anything. Now, do you think it's worse or better that he was a volunteer?
How brutal that regime was. It was just dehumanizing. It was not only just rape, sexual assault, but the way in which they killed children and women was unbelievable. Like I said, hardcore Nazis were shocked by how nuts the Western Ukrainians were.
You are listening to Just Right, broadcasting around the world and online.
Maybe now is a good time for me just to refresh people's memory of what this country is actually like and how it can be compared to either the Weimar Republic or to Nazi Germany, at least at the beginning, 1933, right, 34, right? First of all, we're socialist. There's no question of that. This is the society we live in. We have high inflation, so did the Weimar Republic. Censorship, that's self-evident. Forced medical experimentation without consent. An admiration for a basic dictatorship. The destruction of founding institutions. The tearing down of statues of men better than they are. Revisionist history, sympathy with terrorists, turning a blind eye to the burning of churches, martial law to quell peaceful protests, the police following the dictates of politicians rather than the law, state funding and control of the media, war with Russia, euthanasia of the mentally ill, intolerance of dissent, freezing the bank account of dissenters, imprisonment of dissenters, racism, arbitrary detention without due process, state indoctrination through total control of the education system, destruction of the family, genital mutilation of children, unfettered abortion, a culture of hate, a culture of exclusion, an ideology of superiority. Sounds like Nazis, sounds like Trudeau. An attitude of arrogance, eugenics, and for that, consider Tommy Douglas, the founding father in Canada of our socialized medical system. He was a eugenicist, and he just didn't give it up. He was a eugenicist for decades. He wrote a thesis on it. A diminishing diplomacy and international relations. Think of India and Trudeau recently. A worsening international reputation. Think of last Friday. And the glorification of Nazis and Nazism. So in short, what our current parliament, our current country has in common with Nazi Germany is a desire for total power and control over every aspect of our lives. This is a country where the individual is subservient to the state, just like it was in Nazi Germany. But you ask Artur Pavlovsky, who spent considerable amount of time in solitary confinement, for feeding the poor, or for giving a speech. You know, you ask Tamara Leash whether or not she doesn't consider herself a political prisoner. You know, you look at that applauding of this actual Nazi in Parliament, or the lockdowns over the last few years, the destruction of our economy, the inflation rate, which makes it almost impossible for some people to live, certainly not to buy a house or to rent an apartment or to eat meat, or to buy gas. And don't tell me that, you know, yeah, sure, we're not like the Nazis during 1942 to 1945, but we're getting there.
Well, whether we are getting there or we have been there, except in moderated and mitigated because of political circumstances, the facts of the matter is the Germans who surrendered to the Allied powers, which is Britain and America, they were not handed over to the Soviet Union because they had fought against the Soviet Union, right? They were not handed over. They were not brought to justice. There was no accounting for them. They were safely transferred to America, to Britain, to Canada, to Australia, New Zealand. And that's the big question that people have to answer. The documents, the archives, they need to come out and tell us why this was done. We had fought a war. 50 million people had died. These were the people responsible. It was 18-year-old hunkas of the Ukrainian Nazis who went around killing Poles and Jews, as in Babi Yar, that in a matter, I believe, of 48 hours or a week or less than that, I mean, that I believe this is also a world record, that physically, with guns, over 34,000 Jews were killed, thrown into the mass grave ditches and rolled over, you know. Women were raped, mothers were raped and killed, babies were killed and, you know, tortured, etc., etc. Horrible crimes against humanity that send shivers even as we think about it and speak about it. None of these people were held accountable. None of these people have answered. 80 years later, on September 22nd, Hunka, as a representative of that group of people, is being applauded. And in 80 years, he has not made any repentance and nobody's asked him, okay? But he can disappear into the crowd until he was brought to the visitors gallery in our House of Commons. He was unknown as a person, except to the people around him, his family, his community, and so on. But right across Canada, here in Ontario, in Alberta and in other parts of Canada, there are monuments and memorial to the Bandera group, to the Ukrainian Nazis. In Oakville, there is a huge monument with all the Azov battalion sign in stone grafted, dedicated to the Waffen SS Galician Division. You know, in other words, we Canadians, on whatever background, we keep passing by these monuments and memorials in a collective amnesia. None of us stop and ask, what is this there for? You know, as our soldiers, Canadian veterans of the 20th century wars that are still alive, and their progeny, their generation, who gather on November 11th, the Remembrance Day. Well, there are others who are gathering at these monuments, like in Oakville, like in Alberta, to commemorate their heroes. And who are their heroes? Their heroes are the people who Canada at that time, in 1939, 1945, were fighting against, as the Americans were fighting against, you know? We have in our universities, in the University of Alberta, for instance, scholarship funds in the name of the Ukrainian heroes, the Bandera group. And I discovered that University of Alberta has a scholarship fund in the name of Yaroslav Hunka. So for Christia Freeland, who comes from Alberta, to say she doesn't know about this, she's a historian, or she studied history. So we have all of this information right here. For the last at least half a century, but going all the way back to 45, nobody asked. Why nobody asked? Because that million or so Ukrainian Canadian is a very powerful lobby that you need to suck upon to get elected, right? So it is a circle. When you sup with the devil, when you dance with the devil, you eventually become part of the devil. That is what we have. If you flip over, we have Jewish members of parliament. We have Jewish organization in this country who are supposed to represent the interests, the memories, the heartaches and the joys of the Jewish people around the world and here in Canada. But Jews are not a monolithic people. No more than Christians are monolithic, Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus, Buddhists, no one is a monolithic people. No one group as a people can claim, you know, our hands are clean and we are virtuous. So I told my friends, my Jewish friends, when this problem began in 2022, but going all the way back to 2014, that the Ukraine war is going to reveal very nasty things and it's going to come out. And when the war began with Russia, or the proxy war, I said the Russians have in their archive all the stories going way back into the 1920s and 30s. So the Eastern European Jews have a very mixed story. Why is it that for the last 18 months in this war, just the 18 months, if we don't go all the way back, why is it that the Jewish voices have gone along with this outrage that the collective West, United States, Canada, Britain, France, Germany, Australia, New Zealand, the collective West is invested in supporting Ukraine in the name of democracy, where every aspect of democracy has been shredded. Churches have been closed down. Zelensky's, in fact, postponed the election for the presidency, right? During the two world wars, America didn't postpone presidential election or congressional election. But in the name of democracy, collective West is invested in a country that is right at the bottom of corruption of all form. It is the most corrupt country in the world. It is a laundromat for corruption. And it is run by Nazis, Ukrainian Nazis. Where is the Jewish voices on this matter? In fact, it is just the opposite. There's been a celebration that Zelensky is the greatest hero. He's a Jew and he's the greatest hero of Jews, and in this case, the Jews of Ukraine. He's standing up against the Russian. So who funds Zelensky? It's a whole phalanx of Ukrainian Jewish oligarchs. Igor Kolomoisky is the leading name. Zelensky was an actor in his studio. He financed his campaign. And it is not only Igor Kolomoisky. He's not alone. A whole lot of them. And then you have presidents like Poroshenko, a Jew, a Nazi. You know, and so the story comes out, and the story comes out and will come out, more of them will come out, that the Eastern European Jews were engaged on both sides of the equation. They were engaged on the one side with the German Nazis. Hitler and his Third Reich had Jews in their organization, you know. There are enough record of that. People can go and study this. I have a book right here in my hand, Zionism in the Age of Dictator by Leni Brenner. Name, numbers, accounts of German Jews who participated with the Nazis. And we can see they're participating with the Ukrainian Nazis, you know. And that is a story that has been suppressed and airbrushed away. So the East European Jews, the Jews of Russia, of Poland, modern-day Poland, of Lithuania, of Estonia, of Latvia, of Ukraine, they are what is historically known as and has been suppressed. They're Khazarian Jews. They're not Semites. There's nothing Semitic about them. Not an iota of Semitism is there. That means they are not, you know, like the Arabs are Semites. The Sephardim Jews are Semites. The Jews of the third world, of the global south, of the Arab world, their Semites. So now the whole story is going to come out. People are going to ask the question. The current issue of The Economist magazine is carrying the story of the huge movement that is now taking place from Israel and from other parts of Europe of the Khazarian Jews, that is the European Jews, going to Ukraine. This is coming back home. Well and good. Fine. Coming back home. So what has been happening in the Middle East, in Israel? What were the claims over there? What was the fight over there? This story is going to grow in nature. The global South that is affected in this war, in its own way, and the consequences are spreading, you know, we haven't even touched it. So there is a lot of skeleton in the West. There's a lot of skeleton in Canada, hidden in our cupboards, will have to be explored. But I doubt it whether the people in power will allow that investigation or will not slam down upon free speech as disinformation and misinformation to clamp it down or deplatform those voices who are going to ask these questions. People cannot write about these things in the current state of affairs that we are in, you know. It is basically narratives that are being told. Narratives are constructed to airbrush away the hard facts. But they are going to persist. They might not be told over here in Canada, but they are going to be told in Africa. They're going to be told in India. They're going to be told in China. But most importantly, all of this will be flung at the face of the Western world when this war at some point comes to an end and the Russians bring these people to account publicly for what has happened.
David Creighton from Creighton's Right and the writer at the Postmillennial joins us from Canada, from Ottawa. So, David, it was Russian propaganda. It was the fault of Putin that they brought a Nazi on the floor of Parliament.
Yeah, I mean, this is just so laughable. And on two fronts, really, because clearly there was a Speaker of the House, Anthony Rota, a member of Parliament from the North Bay area of Ontario, who obviously didn't grow up watching Hogan's Heroes. He didn't even seem to know that the Allies were fighting on the same side as Russia during the Second World War. We weren't fighting Russia.
It's the Eastern Front, isn't it, sir? How's it going?
Quite well, thank you. Dismissed.
Looks like a bulge in your lines here at Kiev. I'm strictly Air Force myself, sir, but couldn't that be trouble?
As you said, you have not the background for it. You see, we are merely moving our troops back to pull the Russians into a trap. And I'm just waiting for Radio Berlin to announce that the trap has been sprung. Snap.
You know, I never would have thought of that.
In this 18 months, nearly 500,000 Ukrainian men have died, young and old, close to 500,000 in 18 months. In the entire Second World War, America did not have a casualty of 500,000. When Zelensky was in Washington to meet with the congressional leaders, this is what Mitch McConnell, the Senate minority leader, Republican minority leader, in greeting Zelensky, this is what he said. Then let me read to you. American support for Ukraine is not charity. It's in our own direct interest, not least because degrading Russia helps to deter China. This man is a walking evil, has an absolute internal void of any moral concern. For him, Ukrainians are simply instruments, pawns on the American chess table. So now they're fighting Russia to the last man and sending the message, we're going to come after you, China. So these are just dispensable pawns in the hands of this uniparty empire that is what the United States has become. So far away from anything that was in the imagination and in the making of the American Republic by the founding fathers. That's what America has become. Canada, we have been a vassal state all along. We continue to be a vassal state. So there it is. We embrace them. And if you go before 1939 war, we had our prime minister going to Berlin to meet with Hitler. It lavish praise. With lavish praise, Mackenzie King. And then it was his government that basically said, when the Jews of Europe were trying to flee from Hitler and the Third Reich, it was his government that said, one is one too many. All on the record.
So, Salim, do you want the final word?
Well, our effort, Robert, however small and limited and constrained it is, given time, given the situation in which you started this discussion, like all the other discussions we have engaged in, can only go so far. But the motive behind this effort, knowing very well that can only go so far and our resources are so limited and a capacity to cover it is also finite. Given all of that, the motive, I believe, is to awaken in some manner, to ignite in the minds of those who tune in to listen to us, to begin ask questions. They might not have the answer, but you cannot have the answer unless you begin asking questions. You know, it goes all the way back to Socrates. We might pay the price that Socrates pays. I don't mean in personal term. I mean in people like who ask questions might end up paying the price that Socrates paid, that he was put to death for asking questions. But it's only by asking questions that one can begin to re-examine what is the established narrative. Anything to do with such political power is nothing but evil in itself. And everybody who is engaged with that, either participating in it, drawing their material wealth out of it, or standing aside and making apologetics for it, are all complicit in the lies and the evil of what the deep state does. The good thing, the positive thing, the silver lining is that what happened in the House of Commons on Friday, September 22nd, can lead to that if the Canadian people are really serious, really want the country to be a model of freedom and virtue, then let us all together come together and fumigate our House of Commons, get rid of the 338 penguins and cockroaches and scums out of there, and get a new band of people in there who will always be held accountable for what they do. So if you're going to be free people, if we want to be virtuous people, then we have to be ready to do our part, because the people that we have sent to the parliament are not going to do their part.
I think that's a very positive note that we can end on, Salim. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So when Putin originally announced that he intended to denazify Ukraine, he was, as usual, being upfront and precise about the political problem there, and has since, as usual, followed through on his words. If Salim's prediction that Putin will soon be flinging the evidence of Nazi criminality in the face of the Western world, then all I have to say is what Colonel Hogan says about the Russians in our closing smile for the day, which follows right after our invitation to you to join us again next week, when we will continue our journey in the right direction. And until then, be right, stay right, do right, act right, think right, and be right back here. We'll see you then.
Fade into color, color into black and white. Under the bedclothes, everything will be all right.
Colonel Hogan, here, come in.
I'm sorry if I said anything wrong, sir, out in the compound about Cologne.
I was not listening.
Sir, I was impressed with your little talk about the genius of German military tactics. Is that something you're all born with, sir, or is it the training?
Well, I would say half and half.
Wow, and we're bucking all that.
Your situation, of course, is hopeless.
It's a good thing we got the Russians with us.
Dismissed, Hogan!